The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I want to talk about something that has been proposed in Australia. The Australian government said they're going to introduce new legislation and it would effectively ban social media access to those under the age of 16. They say it would include those under the age of 16 now who currently have access to social media sites. With me to discuss, Wendy Grace, the broadcaster, and Dr. Nicola Fox-Hamilton, cyber psychology lecturer in IADT. You're both very, very welcome. Thanks a million for coming in to us. Wendy, do you think this is a good idea?
I wouldn't say I think it's a good idea. I think it's a necessary one at this particular time, because in the absence of social media companies making their platform safe for children and teens, I think we need an instrument as blunt as this. Because when you look at, you know, we have the IMO here saying this is overwhelmingly destructive. They're comparing it to kind of these social media companies to big tobacco, saying that's how we need to tackle them. And one of the former presidents of Facebook made the same comparison himself when he was talking about, we designed these platforms with addiction in mind to keep you on them for as long as possible. And when you look at the evidence of, basically there's an upwards curve of the amount of time you spend on social media, particularly teens, and the mental health harms associated with that. Now for me as a parent, just seeing that piece of information, that was enough for me to say, okay, I have to delay this introduction for as long as possible. And that's before you even go into all of the other things, cyberbullying, predators. We have, you know, evidence from Snapchat saying they get 10,000 reports. So this is people self-reporting. This isn't all the cases of sextortion per month. And of course, we had that awful case from Northern Ireland where we're and this is, again, this is just a number of girls in the case. Hundreds of girls in 30 different countries from as young as 10 years old, you know, being abused online. And I think it's interesting that I really feel, I don't think it's that parents have a knowledge of this. I think it's that we need to educate big time, because I feel if parents had this knowledge that, look, you know, you wouldn't leave your child in a playground if you knew that there was a paedophile there or a predator, and you wouldn't walk away. Yet we know on these apps, this is happening all the time, and we're putting these devices into these into our children's hands. I don't think parents are doing it willingly. I think that they're just not aware. And something like this, it's made, we're talking about it now, it's made headlines all over the world. It's an awareness raising piece. I think it's something that's going to force parents to go, hang on, why are they banning it? Is it really that bad? And kind of start to get the wheels turning.
So even if we don't, there's maybe a value in it, kind of a ripple effect, that there's a attention on the issue, at least, at the very least. Nicola, what say you? Is there a value in a kind of a blunt instrument like this, a ban?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of a ban. I think it is a blunt instrument and it takes away the positive aspects of social media for a lot of young people. Like, I talked to some of my students today and they talked about how they were able to make friends, connect with friends, explore their own identities and things like that online. And so you're taking away a really powerful place for them, because we never really talk about the benefits of social media. We focus very exclusively on the negatives. The relationship between social media and mental health is actually not clear at all. The very good quality recent research now suggests that on average, it actually has no effect for most people. It's extremely neutral. And of course, within that, there's some variation. So there's some people who get really positive effects from it, real benefits from it. And there are some people who are more vulnerable and don't use it in a way that supports their mental health. And we need to, I think, focus more on that. Like, why are some people more vulnerable? We know some of the reasons, like kids with intellectual disabilities are more vulnerable. Kids who don't have guardians watching them and helping them through things and someone to talk to are more vulnerable. So how can we intervene in cases like that rather than banning it for everybody and getting rid of the benefits? The other thing is, when you ban something and you make something prohibited, you make it impellingly or like much more compelling for kids. They will find a way to go online. They will do it in ways that are much more unsafe, in spaces that are much less moderated and watched. So you'll find them in darker spaces online, much more at risk to the harms on there. So I think overall, it's not really good. I think we should be supporting them through, you know, giving them autonomy, but like supported autonomy to go online in ways that are not harmful to them.
But we're talking about as well, like kids under the age of 16 here, like as a 12, 13, 14 year old, are they capable of being given kind of informed autonomy to be able to kind of conduct themselves in a safe way online? Do they have that sense, all of them?
Yeah, well, I'm not suggesting letting 12-year-olds free on the internet with no support or watching them at all. So you need to do it in a very scaffolded way. And this is why kids with no guardians are more vulnerable, because they are just let free on there to do whatever they want. But if you allow them to use, say, WhatsApp to communicate with their friends, and you keep an eye on what they're doing, and you catch any problems, and you help educate them about it when those problems happen, like, why did you talk to that person that way? How do you feel about that person talking to you that way? And you build digital skills, and they get more resilience through dealing with smaller problems at the start. And then you allow them onto social media, but you're watching their accounts. You're going in and checking with their, not their permission, but with their knowledge. So you're not breaking their trust by going in and spying on them. They know that you're doing it. You're watching for what they're doing, whether they're doing things well, whether other people are dealing with them well. And as they show that they can actually deal with it and be responsible, then you allow them more freedom.
So Wendy, to kind of use the metaphor you did as well, as opposed to not going to the playground, maybe go to the playground, but you stay there and you keep an eye on the kids.
But this is the problem. You see, at the moment, you know, I'm teaching my kids to ride his bike. It's graduated. Okay, so the stabilizers, you did that bit, you're helping them, you hold on to them, you let them go. At the moment, what seems to be happening when you look at when kids get smartphones around kind of 12, 13 age, just when puberty's hitting and they're changing school, a really vulnerable time in their lives. And it's like me literally putting the kid on the bike, pushing them onto the M50 with no stabilizers. They see you now. You know, that's what we're doing. There's no kind of graduated introduction. And I know how to ride a bike, because I know when my child is 12 or 13, they're going to be more digitally literate than me. So again, a lot of this is in the absence of kind of knowledge and education. And it's all very well to say, well, we need a scaffolded approach. But we know in Ireland from the CyberSafe Kids research, the majority of teens that are online are allowed to have access whenever they want. About a quarter of them say that there's no rules in their home. Again, that's not a finger wagging thing at parents. I genuinely think that's about a lack of education. There's a reason you have the US Surgeon General saying actually social media should have a mental health warning on it, because we've seen the impact to be so detrimental on young people's mental health. There's also a lawsuit with 48 US Attorney Generals on a similar kind of topic. So for me, it's just, unfortunately, this thing has kind of snowballed out of control too fast. Social media companies didn't design these platforms with children in mind, but we do know they designed them to keep us on them for as long as possible. And until I actually think the Australian ban, if this was happening in other countries, I would hope it actually kind of forces the hand of some of these companies to say, no, actually, you have to make them safer places for not just for everybody, because when you think of some of the kind of toxic algorithms and things that are just absolutely awful, with the flick of a switch, they could turn that off, you know, but they don't. So I think, yes, it is a blunt instrument, but it will force, I think, change, hopefully, from some of these social media companies. But there needs to be a lot of talk around public health awareness, but also coupling that with education and the digital literacy piece. And that's before you even go into time spent online. And Irish teens are spending 3-4 hours on average per day online. That's time spent away from their friends, sports, being outdoors. It's in front of a screen. So there's actual real elements of social deprivation there. So for me, it's just, even though you can talk about the positives, the balancing scales, all of the negatives are just far too great. So for now, it's just a case of, until we can do more, it's probably necessary.
Nicola, what about those kind of children? And again, it's not a kind of finger wagging exercise, but with the best will in the world, there will be children out there who will be given access without the scaffolding around them, as you say, that by allowing access and by encouraging kind of that it's, you do it in an informed way and in a kind of in an open and transparent way and in a way that kind of includes a bit of oversight and all of that, that not everybody is going to follow that advice and that those vulnerable children will suffer.
Yeah, I think that's why we need education in schools and educational programs run through schools for this as well. I think that is a problem and it's something that needs to be dealt with. I still don't think the answer is banning it for everyone, because some people are at risk. It's kind of like saying, well, some people have eating disorders, so we shouldn't be allowed to eat. You know, it's something that lots of people are doing without any negative consequences. And so banning it for all of them is going to have unintended consequences. And like the Surgeon General did say, putting a mental health warning on these.
What would be the negative consequence of banning it for everyone?
So potential consequences are that kids will go into more risky spaces that don't have a ban on them. They'll steal their parents' IDs to try and get around it. It depends how the social media companies are actually enforcing it. Also, self-regulation
by
the social media
companies.
I can't help but think when you're talking about the IDs, it made me think, of course, you know, many years ago, fake IDs, all that, as in other things that are made illegal for, well, in the case of cigarettes and alcohol, it's 18, right? You know, yes, we, some of us, hands up, sorry, mom, would have drank alcohol before that. However, I do think the overall, the law is an educator. It changes behaviour. It's a deterrent. It does have an impact, because if it didn't, well, I don't think the laws would be in place in the first place.
On the other hand, like in South Korea, they banned all internet access for young people between 12 and 6 a.m. because they figured it was impacting their sleep. Kids all found ways around it. And the overall impact over time was that kids were getting 1.36 minutes extra sleep over time. It does not work to ban things. They will find their way around it, but they will do it in risky ways. They were using really risky VPNs to get access. They were stealing their parents' IDs. I think you'll just end up with some kids who are very vulnerable and then not able to talk to their parents about it because they weren't supposed to be doing it.
I'm just going to freeze my children at age 10 and 8 before all of this starts. You're probably in the same boat as me. When, how old is your oldest?
My eldest is 7.
Freeze them now.
But the interesting thing is his school did, you know, one of these, will you sign up to a voluntary smartphone-free code? Now, the overall figures was 90-something percent, but you could see as the kind of classes get older, the commitment kind of waned. Junior and senior infants, 100%. Yes, obviously it gets more difficult as the children get older, but I'm already kind of hearing that pressure. But it saddens me that also when they've done kind of these cyber talks in the school, there's very little attendance. And in talking to the likes of CyberSafe Kids, they would echo that across the country, you know, a few parents turning up for an entire school. So how are we going to educate each other and parents? And really, it's about empowering parents, but also empowering teens to be able to navigate the space, because it's not something that it can be such a good, you know, but it's in the absence of that, until we get to that place where these things are happening, the harms for me are just too great.
Well, listen, thank you both very much for coming in. Wendy Grace, broadcaster, Dr. Nicola Fox Hamilton, cyber psychology lecturer at IADT.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.